This is Ben Craven from bencraven.com, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast. Welcome to episode 14 of the Yes Music Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Mulryan. As usual, there are lots of ways to get involved with the podcast via the site www.yesmusicpodcast.com, where you can subscribe to the RSS feed of the podcast by iTunes. You can also subscribe to the email blog post and episode updates. You can read and then comment on show notes there or blog posts. You can follow the show on Twitter at Yes Music Podcast. You can email the show, show@yesmusicpodcast.com, or you can even upload a file via the link on the right-hand side of the website. Please leave a voice message and appear on the show yourself by calling 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417. And you can also now listen to the podcast on Stitcher. If you have a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app for free and create a channel containing both the Yes Music Podcast and MJ Murphy's Twilight Guitar Podcast. That should keep you entertained for hours. So this week we're back to the featured albums, the featured studio albums. This time it's Union from 1991. As you already know, the Yes Music Podcast is just about Yes Music. And when I turn to albums like Union, I'm rather glad about that, because I shudder to think how complicated it would be to explain the genesis of this album. Fortunately, there are plenty of accounts available if you want to find out more. For our purposes here, it's enough to say that there were two separate camps of former Yes musicians working in isolation until John Anderson visited Los Angeles to record vocals for the next Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman, Howe album. He was played some tracks that the other camp were working on and ended up singing on them as well. As Mark Toner put it on Twitter recently, probably too many bands on this album. In fact, at ProgSam6 on Twitter pointed out that there are arguably three bands on this album. He said, "I like Union a lot, but must admit that it sounds like a collection from three different bands, with Howe/Bruford being the third. Howe had a solo album out at the same time that featured Bruford. Bits and pieces of it also show up on Union." So thanks for that information, ProgSam. So what we have from this is an album made up of all the usable tracks from both camps, plus the Howe Bruford items, with the addition of Anderson vocals on all of them, and Chris Squire backing vocals on some of the original ABWH songs. Are you keeping up? The sleeve notes show an incredible number of additional producers, engineers and session musicians. Most worryingly for me, no fewer than 11 keyboard and synth players. As you may have picked up, I don't like the idea of even one additional musician on Yes albums. There's also Jimmy Horn, if that's how you pronounce his name, credited with guitar work, and fascinatingly, producer credits to both former Yes collaborator Eddie Offord and future producer and band member Billy Sherwood. Anyway, what we're interested in here is what came out of this immensely confusing melting pot. Just for the record, as it were, the Yes band members are credited as John Anderson, Bill Bruford, Steve Howe, Tony Kaye, Trevor Rabin, Chris Squire, Rick Wakeman and Alan White. The cover art is back to classic Roger Dean painting, incidentally rather reminiscent of a certain album by YMP listener Ben Craven. So putting the virtual needle to the virtual record, we could be forgiven for expecting a fantastic album with all those Yes musicians combining their genius. It starts in a positive mood with I Would Have Waited Forever. There's an effective vocal introduction featuring characteristic harmonies and John Anderson leading from the front. Steve Howe produces a powerful riff which becomes an effective hook in the song in classic Yes style, followed by a verse where the Squire Anderson harmonies are particularly strong. Bill Bruford continues his expert use of digital percussion from the ABWH album, which will incidentally feature on a future Yes Music Podcast episode, and there's even a touch of the archetypal short repeated vocal patterns we've noticed so many times before in Yes Music. I imagine you can hear in my voice, however, that there's a but approaching. And here it comes. It's a good track with motion and strength, but I realised when reading the album sleeve notes what for me is missing here. Like on ABWH, Tony Levin is on bass guitar. Please don't misunderstand me, Tony Levin is one of the greatest progressive rock bassists in the world. Who could need more evidence than his work with King Crimson, where incidentally, of course, he teamed up with Bill Bruford. But he's not Chris Squire, and on this track, like on ABWH, he is sunk into the background of the mix. He's also a session musician here. I feel that Chris Squire's genius for creating astounding bass lines would have taken this track to a different level. I'm not sure what he would have done, but I am sure that the song would have benefited from bass as well as vocals from Mr. Squire. Rick Wakeman is also fairly well hidden here, and I miss his soloing. In fact, of course, I'm going to use the term Rick Wakeman as a kind of shorthand for the keyboard work on this album, as I really don't know what's him and what are the session musicians. Anderson inserts echoes of both Trevor Horn and his own We Have Heaven-style wordless vocals, and the chorus swings in really effectively each time it reappears, and there's a great Howe solo. I'm left feeling this would have been another really fine ABWH track, but maybe doesn't really hit the heights of what Yes should be. Overall, it's a good start to the album, but I feel it's less than it could have been. Next we have Shock to the System. The song is based on a guitar riff which could have been written by Trevor Rabin rather than Steve Howe. It's rocky in the extreme, as we'll see with quite a few tracks, with powerful doubling by bass guitar, again played by Tony Levin. Vocals are not augmented by Chris Squire this time. It's quite close in spirit to the Big Generator Yes style, but percussion by Bruford and Steve Howe adding more typical lead guitar runs reminds us who is playing. However, listening to it, I feel that the main riff is actually more suited to Rabin's style, as I'll say on other tracks as well. I don't think Howe is completely convincing with this style, and I'm reminded of his reluctance to play Owner of a Lonely Heart live for this very reason. At about 3 minutes 23, there's also a section of acoustic guitar beneath John Anderson, and there's something a little odd in the shape of the melody. It's a bit like an unfinished demo version of a song which needs some more work. It's a good contrast to the other sections, and when Howe piles back in with a huge solo, the track moves along nicely, but then takes a strange, meandering, fairly shapeless route to the end. I'm also rather disappointed that Bill Bruford's drumming here is a bit four-square, which I'm sure fits the mood of the song, but doesn't give him much scope for creativity. Once again, I'm left feeling that he is underused and that Rick Wakeman isn't totally committed to the track. It definitely has moments of quality, but overall seems a bit weak. In Masquerade, however, Steve Howe provides 2 minutes and 10 seconds of perfection. An oasis of calm. It's like coming home to classic era Yes, a beautiful acoustic piece which would not sound out of place on Fragile or any other main sequence album. Inspirational stuff from prog rock's ultimate craftsman. Other comments are rather superfluous. If you haven't heard Masquerade because it's hidden away on Union, then make it your mission to do so. Lift Me Up is the first track on Union from the other Yes, the band known to Yes fans as Yes West sometimes. Ben Craven tweeted me this week saying that this episode of the YMP would be much easier to put together if I just concentrated on Yes West tracks. Thanks for the tip, Ben. We shall see. So instead of Steve Howe, we have Trevor Rabin on guitar, Chris Squire plays bass, Tony Kaye is on keyboards, and Alan White keeps time. Clearly, with the addition of John Anderson on vocals, we have the 90125 and Big Generator lineup. And we're straight into a huge Rabin power riff. The music seems immediately more full of life than the opening two tracks, and of course there's Chris Squire pumping out his habitual creative bass part. The music calms down nicely, and then John Anderson shares the vocals with Rabin in a great section with nicely paced percussion and instrumentation. It's definitely a Rabin composition, of course, 80s pop rock, but of a higher order, especially in the catchy sing-along hook-laden chorus. It fills the imaginary stadium once again. Good contrast is achieved with a military-sounding section with snare work by White, amongst other creative ideas. Anderson's contribution is a little light, however, and the fact mentioned on the sleeve notes that he added his vocals later is very clear when you listen. A great Rabin solo and inventive passages lead to an atmospheric end. It stands strong and firm as a quality track in its style, and perhaps would have been a better choice for the opening of the album. Without Hope You Cannot Start the Day returns us to the ABWH combination. The start is once again very atmospheric, with refined Wakeman keyboard work beneath Anderson on great form singing a strong theme. Howe enters with an effective solo which ushers in the main meat of the work, but unfortunately the groove which is set up doesn't fulfil the promise of the opening for me. I think it falls into the category of settling for a bit of standard four-in-a-bar rock feel, at least initially. A bit of a shame and a bit too close to signalling a lack of ideas for me. It's really good to hear Squire on backing vocals, with Anderson taking the lead again, and the chorus has an effective cross-phasing of rhythm against the accompaniment. But we are too soon back to the rather monotonous four-in-a-bar stuff, even though it's spiced up by Wakeman and Howe, almost but not quite entering a classic sparring match. There are engaging parts in the song, particularly featuring great electronic percussion from Bruford again, but it's rather spoiled for me by some of the more standard sections. Once again, I'm disappointed that Rick Wakeman seems lost in the mix, rather like in Tales from Topographic Oceans, and they don't seem to have known how to bring the piece to a satisfying conclusion, and it just fades away. With Saving My Heart, we're back to Yes West, and very firmly back to 80s pop rock, with the emphasis rather firmly on pop. It's a fun, jaunty little song with a shuffle rhythm, and in fact, if you listen carefully, Alan White is doing some lovely little cymbal figures, not just bashing out the rock-solid beat. It has a very strong, catchy melody in the verse, which features lovely vocal harmonies between Anderson and Rabin. The chorus is blessed with an amazingly singable hook, and it rolls along with splashes of well-paced screeching guitar and other sound effects. The production is great, which is down to Rabin himself, and all the 80s Yes elements are there. The chorus has a fascinating chord change which almost tips the music over into the realm of middle of the road, but perhaps stops just short. Is this classic serious epic Yes? No. Is this a great escapist romp? Certainly. As soon as Miracle of Life starts, we know we are back on more serious Yes ground. There's Tony Kaye's Hammond sound in the mix, and the blasting opening is soon replaced by a Trevor Horn-inspired, tricky, repeated rhythmical pattern from Rabin, who is then joined by the rest of the band, including, at last, almost a traditional walking bass line from Chris Squire. The music swells and grows very pleasingly, until being interrupted by a vocal interjection, and then Rabin shows off both his rock god soloing credentials and his multi-instrumental fetishes as he wheels out something like a mandolin. It's a blast from the past, blended with vocal and thematic elements from the 80s era of the band, which all works really well. A contrasting section features the two guitarists at a lower tempo feel, and Anderson swaps in and out of the lead vocal role with Rabin. This introduces the huge memorable chorus, but unlike Saving My Heart, Miracle of Life seems to have much more of a serious feel. Less poppy, and more of an uplifting impression. There's no hint of MOR here. Around 4 minutes 25, a strange texture is introduced which sounds like it's been recorded in the open air, with people chatting in the background, and it's an effective idea which reinforces the Miracle of Life theme. Anderson sings Pacifica, Atlantica, and so on, and I think this is supposed to give the impression that all peoples of the world are involved in this song, which I think it achieves rather well, without descending into contrived parody. Overall, it's a feel-good track with just enough classic Yes elements to make it hang together and worthy of a place on a proper Yes album. Silent Talking opens with keyboard voices very like ABWH interspersed with another of those slightly below par guitar riffs. I'm not that keen on Bruford's percussion voices here, and the keyboard effects seem somewhat out of place. When Anderson comes in with the vocals, they also don't seem to fit particularly well. Rather than an interesting and unsettling texture, they seem just to be in the wrong place, or even the wrong song. There is some creative rhythmical and vocal work here, and at least Wakeman's contributions are audible. Howe comes up trumps in the next section, however, with nice characteristic runs, and Anderson produces great vocal harmonies with the use of what sounds like a digital delay, very reminiscent of his collaborations with Mike Oldfield, for example, on the Crises album. The track is a bit of a fragment, but ends very well with a great full texture. It's a shame it starts quite poorly. Next, we are back once again to the Yes West crew for the More We Live, Let Go. It's another of those atmospheric openings, with the vocal duties again shared between Anderson and Rabin, with well-placed backup from Squire in lead vocal mode for a time. There's creative swirling between the stereo, and the whole feel of the track reminds me of an 80s film soundtrack, complete with sparkling, tinkling percussion, elaborate layered vocal harmonies, and lots of keyboard filling up the texture. There's a pleasing interplay between lead vocals and one of those commenting backing singer choruses we've seen in the past. So it's an effective track, not single-orientated and not epic in scale or feel, but a worthy inclusion here. Angkor Wat comes next, and this is the first so-called bonus track which isn't on the original vinyl record. I have to say I love this track. There are sound effects galore as Anderson and the ABWH gang try to create the feel of the ancient temple complex of Angkor Wat in Cambodia. I think this is achieved very well with Anderson's ethereal vocals, and a lot of creative soundscape activity from the rest of the band. Once again, like some tracks on Tormato, this isn't the song to choose to introduce new listeners to Yes, particularly when the Cambodian poetry comes in, read absolutely beautifully by Pauline Cheng. It's spine-tingling for me, and some of the most deeply affecting Yes music for some considerable time. The vocal cadences of the poetry are a perfect end to the track, and remind me of how Western-orientated my musical and artistic education has been, and how blinkered I usually am when sublime works of creativity like this exist far beyond my experience. So we are 10 tracks into the CD version of the album, and there are still 5 more to go. I can't help wondering which ones could have been left out. As Ben Craven put it on Twitter, there are a few tracks there that together make a great mini-album, but it's hard to make weak material sound better by surrounding it with someone else's songs. Anyway, next up is Dangerous, brackets look in the light of what you're searching for. Is this the most convoluted Yes title of all time? I'm sure you can suggest others. Unsurprisingly, with that title, it's an Anderson composition with Jonathan Elias, who is involved in other tracks as well. I'm resisting the temptation to repeat my sense of unease at all the different folk credited with conspiring on this album. It's the ABWH folk again, with some backing vocals added by Squire. There's a promising start with some great production and Howe sounds much more convinced by the guitar part. There's even a really quite Squire-esque bass part. In fact, this track is reminiscent of the power and production of Trevor Horn-produced 90125, despite being by the ABWH crowd. There's light and shade, great hooks and catchy melodies, but crucially it's all infused with a bit of a prog rock feel alongside the pop. Fantastic stuff which really makes you sit up and take notice while it careers forward uncontrollably with even more energy and drive than songs like Owner of a Lonely Heart. This is far and away the best track from this version of Yes on the album so far. And in fact, all the remaining tracks are from the ABWH team. Holding On is next. John Anderson sets up an effective repeated vocal figure at the start, and all the other musicians add subtle touches to the opening of the song. I'm once again disappointed when it turns to a much rockier feel quite quickly, but it's a well-constructed groove with some good atmospheric instrumentation beneath a strong Anderson vocal line. It strays towards well-constructed pop, but there's sufficient Steve Howe guitar work and elaborate vocal arrangements to keep you interested, and the different sections are put together carefully for maximum contrast. As long as Anderson's characteristic vocals are there, it sounds like a Yes song, despite the completely different aesthetic to the classic sound and approach. It's a very interesting track with a lot to listen to in the textures and sections. A worthy addition. Evensong is another of those Yes songs which borrows its title from a completely different musical genre, or in this case a service in the Church of England, and no doubt other traditions as well. Like Madrigal from Tormato, the title is descriptive of the music, rather than an accurate use of the word. This track is a little reminiscent of the solo projects included on Fragile, as it's Bill Bruford and I assume Steve Howe duetting for 55 seconds. Interestingly, it's credited to Tony Levin and Bill Bruford, so maybe it's Levin playing rather than Howe. Is it one of the Bruford Howe tracks at Prog Sam 6 was referring to? If you know, let me know please. Of course it's a fragment, but a beautiful one showcasing Bruford's mastery of electronic percussion used in a melodic manner. A softly spoken, restrained piece of tranquil mood music. It serves, like elsewhere, as a bit of a gentle palate cleanser before we begin the penultimate track, or the final one if you're listening to the vinyl album, Take the Water to the Mountains. The start is very reminiscent of tracks on ABWH like Birthright. It's all moodiness and subtle sound effects, all very well done. Anderson's vocal line is low in his range, producing a highly appropriate restrained feel above sustained accompaniment, contrasting with some more rhythmical ideas which produce a very interesting texture. There's a masterful vocal arrangement evoking tribal chanting, which is then disturbed by a quiet explosion, if you can have one of those, and Anderson ends the track with what sounds like Aboriginal shouted words. At only 3 minutes and 6 seconds long, it seems like the opportunity to make this an epic has been missed. There's plenty of strong material there to extend the track, but sadly, this hasn't been done. The second bonus track on the album is also the last track on the CD. It starts in typical rocky fashion with the addition of Steve Howe playing sounds like clock bell chimes over the top. Interestingly, this track once again has more of a feel of Yes West than ABWH. It's a catchy pop rock number, clearly a contender for a single, or maybe a B-side. Well constructed, it trundles on nicely, but doesn't really excite or reawaken the by now fairly dormant prog rock sensibilities. There are good contrasts between sections, but I'm left feeling, not for the first time, that I expect much more from Yes. Phew, it's been a bit of a marathon. So overall, Union is a mighty odd beast. There are great tracks, and there are ordinary tracks. I suppose I should take Ben Craven's suggestion and program my own version of Union, leaving out the filler. So there's a challenge. If you have a suggested track list including only what is really worthwhile, drop me a line. As it is, Union remains for me the album I listen to least of all. There's plenty of great music to discover, but it's so deeply hidden amongst the 15 tracks. Maybe the band should have done the reverse of Key Studio and created their own Best of Union album. So that's about it for this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. I do hope you've enjoyed it. Next week we move on to the next studio album, Talk, from 1994. So your homework, as usual, is to listen to Talk and see what you think. Then listen next week and see if you agree with me. Also, please get involved, as usual, at www.yesmusicpodcast.com, on Twitter, by following at yesmusicpodcast, and interacting, by sending an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com, by uploading a file from the link on the right-hand side of the website, or by leaving a voicemail on 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.